So I reckon spring is in the air.
It is, yeah. Daffodils. My neighbour was cutting his lawn the other day, which is,
Cutting his lawn?
yeah. I think he might regret that after the hard frost we had this morning, but.
Yeah, I'm not quite at the cutting the lawn stage, but I've got spring flowers in the garden. And this morning, as we're recording this on a Friday morning, it's sunshine outside. It's
It
amazing.
is a beautiful day, so let's we'll finish this rubbish and get out and go for
Get
a
out
walk.
there.
Just one thing before we crack on is just to encourage people to listen to the very end of today's podcast, because we've got a special offer which we're going to share with listeners at the end of the show.
Welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast. My name is Glyn Coy, and I explore Wiltshire with my camera and come onto this podcast every 2 weeks to talk about it. And with me, I have my trusted sidekick,
Paul Tillett, who also lugs a camera around Wiltshire taking photographs of wonderful things.
This week, I wanted to start with, before we get into the guts of part two of the Deverils, a couple of people have written in to me over the last few weeks, and
that'll be both listeners then.
Yeah, two out of the three, maybe. Don't do yourself down. I've seen the listening statistics, and we've actually got quite a fan base now.
Yeah, not bad.
International fan base as well.
Yeah.
So, a couple of people wrote in, and before I go into what they actually wrote, I'd just like to say we do welcome questions. So if you've got any questions or comments about anything that we say that might be right or wrong, or you've got an issue with, or you want to encourage us, or just talk about anything that we've covered in the podcast, do reach out. We're open to people writing in and talking about what people are saying to us. You can do that via the website, hiddenwiltshire.com. There is a contact page there where you can fill in your details, or you can find us on the Hidden Wiltshire Facebook page and fire us a message there as well. So the first person who wrote in was Chris Ashdown, and he wrote in a couple of podcasts ago. We talked about the area around Bratton and Eddington, and we talked about the rapeseed fields by the Long Barrow, and I mentioned that I felt that there was a reduction in the amount of rapeseed in Wiltshire in general, and we ummed and ahed about whether that was right or wrong, but he's confirmed that it's actually correct. So on oilseed rape, a lot of the treatments of this for the seed and for the crop are no longer allowed to be used. There are rules and regulations that have come in that have prevented them treating the crop, so they've become susceptible to flea beetle. And some crops have really been devastated from that. There was a field near Urchfont that was almost wiped out, so it's become uneconomic. And some farmers are pulling out of actually planting the rapeseed, which is why we don't see it as much in the Wiltshire landscape.
Yeah, I read up on it after that podcast, and I think if I'm right in saying that it was in the Netherlands, got really badly hit by the beetle or whatever it was. Yeah, I think, I mean, it was me that was disagreeing with you about the rapeseed, so I was completely wrong. But, I mean, certainly looking around here, I think because we've got somebody who farms it pretty heavily and produces rapeseed oil, you know, you just see a lot of it here. But
and to be fair, the discussion was because last year in that field on Eddington Hill, there was a lot of rapeseed, so I did see some. But it was, I think the comment was more about, when I would drive over towards Avebury from Devizes, those fields in the past have been, you can drive along and the fragrance of the yellow flowers comes through into your car. But last couple of years, I haven't seen the rapeseed up there.
Yeah.
But that was the reason why. Another person that wrote in, and this, I think you'll be happy with this and happy to reply to this particular question, but it was from Hannah Dore. And Hannah she farms Bridge Farm with her husband, which is the area that covers Tan Hill and Ryberry Camp and around there. So she did ask the question. Well, she said, really enjoying your Hidden Wiltshire podcast. Here at Bridge Farm, All Cannings in the Pusey Vale, we have the Neolithic Iron Age Ryberry Camp, Tan Hill and Wansdyke. Just wondered if you had ever visited. Have you ever visited Paul?
Ooh, and once or twice.
And she's made the point that they have some spectacular walks and views from the hills, and we can confirm that.
Yes.
And we can also confirm that we have walked there, and we are fully intending to have more than one podcast on that part of the world.
Yeah. And I think I bumped into, is it Hannah, did you say?
Hannah Dorr, yeah.
I think I bumped into what must be one of her neighbours, delightful farmer, a guy called Jim Reed, and I was walking up around that area and bumped into him, and he there's a place that a hang gliding club or whatever they call them, that's not the right terminology, but they go up there to fly, and there's a sort of gravel track that goes all the way up to the top of the hill, and Jim charges something like £1.05p or £1.15p to go up there, and he sprung on me one day when I was coming back down and said, I noticed you didn't put £1.15 in my box. purely because I didn't have £1.15 on me.
Yeah.
But a lovely chat with him, really nice bloke. And yeah, I even took his photograph, and which is on my website, but not for sale.
Yeah. But it is nice up there. I think we will go there. It's interesting, actually, because I know Hannah Dorr and her husband, their uncle Tim Dorr, who I know via Twitter, he built the Long Barrow at All Cannings.
Yes, that was it. Yes, I knew I needed to know.
Yeah, so we might, in the future, I haven't asked him yet, but maybe we'll get him on to talk about that. And
he'll find a place for us in his Long Barrow.
Yeah. But the other area up there, of course, is Milk Hill. And I know the farmer who farms that, David Carson. So I'm sure he listens. And David, we might get you on at some point. So I'll be in touch.
Yeah, and of course, a lot of the land up there is owned by Natural England, who I'm as bored you rigid about, I'm a volunteer, so it falls within our sort of area, so every now and then sort of some of my colleagues go up there and do some work fencing and stuff on Milk Hill and around there.
Yeah definitely. So what have you been up to in Wiltshire over the last couple of weeks?
That was almost an intended segue there, talking about Natural England and nature reserves. I've spent a fair bit of time on the reserve last couple of weeks. Been doing some helping out with some bird surveys up there, which we do I think once a month. I'm not much of a birder. I love looking at them and I love photographing them, but I don't really know. I'm not that good at identifying. So I've been going out with a guy who's much better than I am. A guy called Rich Pryor, who I think he listens to the podcast occasionally. He takes beautiful bird photographs. So I've been helping him, sort of just identifying species and counting them. Been doing some of that, and last couple of days we've been up at the reserve doing we're putting up otter fencing. Now don't get excited, there were no otters on Parsonage Down, but it's a very effective form of fencing. So we're installing a willow bed to but I won't go into all the details, but to as a better way of treating the silage runoff from the farmyard. So we're putting in this willow bed, but it's got to be protected because as the guy that who runs the volunteer up there said, you know, it's a very leafy tree and it will be like a salad bar for every deer in South Wiltshire. So we've got to protect it, and otter fencing is the most effective means apparently. But I also went out and did I put something on the Facebook group about concerns about Old Ditch Barrow, which sits above Tilshead, which we another £5 from Stu, my walking mate Stu, and I, we went up there last week, I think it was, just to have a look, because we'd met somebody a few weeks before who said that the Old Ditch Barrow was being sort of destroyed by people riding motorbikes over it. So we thought we'll go and see for ourselves, and not quite right. The barrow is not being used for riding motorbikes. It's actually covered in a sort of chain link fencing to just laid on the ground to protect it from burrowing animals, but it seems to have done a good job stopping motorcyclists as well. So there was no sign of any damage. I mean, they've been riding up down the tracks next to it, but not on the barrow itself. So that was good. So I've updated the Till Valley walk that I posted about on the website. Did a blog about that. So updated that with some photographs of Old Ditch Barrow and White Barrow. And Yeah, the Tool Valley newspaper newsletter want to run that article as well. So I've supplied some photographs to them to go in their newsletter.
Fantastic. That's really good, actually. Oh, it's good, actually, when we get that sort of collaboration from local publications and the rest of it. That's really good news.
And what, you've been doing some stock checks again, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been counting sheep.
Counting sheep?
Not to cure my insomnia.
It's the obvious question, is it? I can see you sitting on a hillside nodding off. I think, damn, I'm going to have to start again.
It's actually more difficult than you think. But yeah, I mean, what I do, one thing I do a couple of times a year, a couple of periods a year, I head up to Dunscombe Bottom, which is just outside Nook, which is a Wiltshire Wildlife Trust reserve. And as a sort of voluntary activity, I go up there to check up on the livestock. So in the summer, we usually have a herd of Dexter's cows. And in the winter, they put some sheep on. And at the moment, they put 31 sheep onto the reserve a couple of weeks ago. So I was up there at the weekend. I did a sort of walk around Nook Castle, which we talked about a couple of podcasts ago. And went over to Dunscombe Bottom to count these sheep. And it's, as I say, it's more difficult than you think because...
they keep moving, don't they?
They do. You've got to get quite close. Because if you try and do it from a distance... You just fail. Yeah. And you're supposed to count 31 and there's 25 and then there's 34 and it's just a nightmare. So you do have to get quite close. But
you must get to know them quite well.
To know
that you haven't counted one twice. Yeah, you tell them apart.
Each year we get to know each other quite well, the herd and myself. And it was quite funny because last year when I would go up to count the cows, they'd often follow me down the hill. It'd be like the Pied Piper of Hamelin, but instead of a load of rats, it would be a load of herd of cows. And one time they started stampeding me, and I was thinking, goodness me, what the hell do I do here? Because they were running towards me. So I turned around and started scarping down the hill to try and get to the fence. And, of course, they weren't chasing me. They were running down to drink the water from the trough. So
Actually, as we... Sounds like we've got one or two farmers listening. It'd be interesting to have somebody sort of write in and say, this is what you do when chased by a herd of cows, because I hear sort of conflicting views on that. I've read that, you know, you should sort of stand your ground and turn around and sort of not run at them, but sort of, you know, wave your arms and speak firmly to them. But that was one thing. Somebody else said run away. So it would be good to know. I was chased by a herd up on Milk Hill, actually, and they were on the nature reserve lands up there. And I mean, they were just very inquisitive, but they were young bullocks, I think.
Yeah.
And they can be quite intimidating.
They can. I mean, I remember last summer I got chased by a little bullock on Milk Hill, and nothing came of it. I just walked very swiftly up to the top of the hill and out of sight. But
having risked it to the ground.
Yeah, it was a bit disconcerting then because, of course, the herd was right over the public footpath that takes you off the hill. So anyway, it's just one of the hazards of walking in the countryside. But yeah, if we could get some advice from some people that know what they're doing around cows, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, terrific. Actually, on the Parsonage Down, where we've got English Longhorn, I mean, they are very, very placid, and you know, obviously you have to be careful, but you certainly don't go in between a mother and its calf. But apart from that, they're really cuddly.
I know that the cows they have over on Tan Hill and they are red rubies, I think, and they're very docile. They can be quite big, but they're very friendly. I walked past them last year and no problems at all.
We've had a fantastic post that we put on the website from our good chum Steve Dewey, who we will get on the show. He's not going to get away with it, but you were going to talk about that, weren't you?
And it's actually relevant to this podcast and the one from before. So we're talking about the Deverils again this week. We talked about it last time. But, of course, the common thing that runs through that area is the River Wylie, which starts just outside of the villages and flows all the way down to Wilton, just on the outskirts of Salisbury. But Steve did a fantastic blog post for the Hidden Wiltshire website. So if you go to thehiddenwiltshire.com, you will see it on the River Wyly. And what he did is he travelled along the length of it and stopped at each bridge and took a photograph. And he's really documented the story of the river as you walk, or as you go along it, all the way from source to end, really. It's a fantastic blog post.
Yeah. And the most impressive thing was that he used the word bosky, which for years and years and years I've been looking for an excuse to use that word, and Steve beat me to it. So well done, Steve. Bosky. B-O-S-K-Y. Yeah, look it up.
And I did, because it was one word that I'd never come across in English, so I had to get the dictionary out, but I was quite impressed that, you know, you managed to weave that into the blog post.
Yeah, I think he speaks a strange version of English, some old English.
Yeah. But I did notice, actually, on the Facebook page, you'd also been recently to Eddington Church, the Priory Church.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, again, enticing people to stick with us to the end. The thing we're going to talk about right at the end is the reason I was over there. But, yeah, I went over to Steeple Ashton, and on the way back I stopped at Eddington Priory Church, principally because I drove right past it and I've never actually been in before. And it was open, which is good news, because so many churches at the moment are not open. Bumped into a very interesting guy who I think is one of the team, that one of the volunteers that just helps look after it. And there were some people in there drawing up sort of a quote to him for the lighting inside the church, which I really didn't think was necessary, because the lighting in there is beautiful. So, yeah, we were chatting for a while at an appropriate distance, wearing face masks. He told me quite a lot about the church. So there's a bit of a post about that on the Facebook group. But and this is a contrived segue, I guess, but there's a connection between Eddington Priory Church with Imber, where we've been before, in that in Eddington Priory Church there are two stone effigies of knights, and I don't know if it's two different knights or the same knight, who and the effigies came from the church in Imber. So when Imber was evacuated, various sort of possessions were taken away, and the two stone effigies were put in the church at Eddington, and the font went to Brixton Deverell Church, where we're going to go in a minute. And of course there is the King Alfred connection between Eddington and Brixton Deverell, where we're going to go now. This fortnight we're going to return to part two of our Deverell's walk. 2 weeks ago we sort of walked from Kingston Deverell to the south in the hills around Summerslade Down, Pertwood and that area, and we finished off by dropping down into to Brixton Deverell, where the walk, which I think I wrote a blog on the 25th of May 2020, if I remember rightly, which is on the website. So we're going to do the sort of second part of that walk today, but starting in Brixton Deverell. And when I did the walk, I must be the only person in Wiltshire or beyond that wasn't aware of this, but there was a fantastic Roman find in Brixton Deverell. So I went back sometime later to sort of photograph the location for this find. And the story is that there's a guy called Luke Irwin, who is a basically deals in rugs. It's sort of a London sort of showroom, very successful rug dealer, and he's and his family bought a house in Brixton Deverell some years ago, and they were converting some outbuildings, and they wanted to put some power into to one of the outbuildings. So they had some workmen in digging a trench, and he Luke Irwin has made a sort of great little video about it, which you Google it and watch it. And apparently there was a sort of cry from one of the workmen, and he went in, and he was basically looking in this trench, and there was this sort of what turned out to be a fantastic mosaic, fantastically preserved mosaic, and a Roman mosaic. So this was 2015. So they covered it up, and Irwin called Wessex, Wiltshire Council, the archaeologists, who came over and looked at it, and they were just astonished at the find. So they did some excavations in Irwin's back garden, basically dug his garden up. And it turns out that this is the site of a vast Roman villa. And again, if you Google this, you can see the sort of the artist's impression of it. I mean, it's two stories, covers a huge area, very, very impressive Roman villa, which was built sometime. And I think as there were sort of different owners, they started building this villa, they think, in around 175 AD, and various works were continued through to sort of around 220 AD. And the site was occupied later until about the 5th century AD. So this was a really important site. And for a villa of this size, it must have been a very important person that lived there who first had it built. And I think the archaeologist, the Wiltshire archaeologist, again, one of them appears on a video saying it would have been not really out of place. There was no sensitivity around building in those days. You want a big villa, you just plonk it right here. And this really would have dominated the landscape. But the area, that immediate area, like the rest of the sort of Deverells, that particular site was occupied right back to sort of Neolithic times, which again lends sort of credence to the fact that this whole area was very significant and valuable to the people that lived and farmed there.
Yeah, and we did talking about the Roman stuff a bit more, and we did talk last time around about the fact that some people strongly believe that two Roman roads intersected at the ford in Kingston Deverell. So there was, it kind of makes sense that you'd have Roman finds in that area, but the size of that villa sounds absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I mean, it was covered back up again. So after they did the excavations, as Luke Irwin says in his little video, he didn't really want to live in a museum. So, which I don't think I would either. So that's understandable. But one of the incredible things was they had a sort of stone trough in their garden, which they were using for growing flowers. And apparently this Wiltshire archaeologist sort of wanders over and says, tell me about this. And Luke Irwin says, well, we found it in the garden, we've been growing flowers in it. And he said, well, this is actually a Roman coffin for a child. So he was growing flowers in it. But if you go to Brixton Deverell, I mean, there's nothing to be seen now. There is a footpath that goes along the back of the garden. And that's why I went back. I thought, well, I don't remember seeing any sign of this, and there is nothing to be seen. There's some very slight sort of mounds in the garden. So don't go sniffing around Mr. Irwin's garden, because he won't thank you for it, and there's nothing to be seen anyway. But it's an incredible site. It really is. I mean, what a find.
Yeah, and it's the other thing I wanted to bring up, because I only picked this up since the last podcast, is that there's been some interesting archaeology found or carried out in that area, and they found some interesting things like the Kingston Deverell hoard, which is in Salisbury Museum. I don't know if you want to say a few words about that, Paul.
Yeah, I actually, it was something that I meant to mention in the last podcast where we sort of started this walk from Kingston Deverell. But I did make some notes about it, and I can't remember exactly where they found it. Do you know where they found it?
I think it was somewhere close to the road. I'm not sure of the exact location, but it seemed to be, there's a school of thought that says it might have been a traveller along the road that decided to bury his stuff to collect it later.
Yeah, well, what I read was actually this was like almost like a typical canteen that a Roman soldier would have carried, because I think that been a similar goods that have been found elsewhere. And so again, the story about it being buried, but it was actually a Roman soldier that sort of stashed it, and you know, presumably never came back for it because it's been found in the relatively recent past.
I think one of the items within it had a stamp on that allowed them to work out where it was from, and apparently it was a well-known pot maker from Pompeii.
Yeah.
So this thing's travelled all the way up from Pompeii to Kingston Deverell. It's quite amazing.
But so, I think some of the goods were they not of a metal? Were they tin or something?
Yes. Yeah. It's a five piece hoard of Roman metalwork, effectively.
Yeah.
You've got strainers that are used to heat and remove the sediment from wine. You've got pots that are used to heat liquids. So it was like a collection of metalwork. So a bit like you know when you go camping, you take your collection of camping stoves that all slot together. It's something like that.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating find. And there is also talk. I've read that there's nothing to see now, of course, but there are the remains of a Roman temple on one of the hills nearby as well. So there was. Yeah. Roman, something very Roman going on in this area.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, we'll come to that in a bit, because it sort of, if we're following that walk, it sort of comes at the almost at the very end. But from Brixton Deverell, again, it's worth having a look at the church. Now, when I went. I've been several times now, but when I went back to have a look at the location for the Roman villa, I went to the church, and it was, I guess, tail end of last year, and sadly the church was shut because I wanted to look at the font from Imber, but it is it's a beautiful church. It's just a stunning setting. It reminded me a little bit of the church at Bratton. It's sort of tucked away off the road, not very far off the road, but you have to sort of go up a track to get to it. There's some sort of houses up there leading up to the church, and then some beautiful views along the Deverells. You know, very, very peaceful spot. And hopefully, if listeners get a chance to go there, then you know, it'll be open and you can go and visit. It's worth just having a look around Brixton Deverell before you leave. The Wylie, sort of River Wylie, flows through there, which is, you know, it's little more than a large stream at that point, and it goes right under the road. So there's a pretty little bridge that goes over it. But on the walk, I sort of from the church, I sort of headed down to the road that runs through Brixton Deverell and turned east towards Longbridge Deverell, and I went sort of, you'll see the route on the website, but I then sort of went down the road for a couple of hundred meters, I think, and then headed up into the hills again. And the day I did the walk, which I recorded for Hindon Wiltshire, it was springtime, late spring maybe, and I remember walking up, it wasn't quite a hollowway, but it was a sort of a track that had sort of, you know, well worn and sort of sunk in, you know, with hedgerows either side. And I just remember the wildflowers there were just stunning. I mean, they were just everywhere. And again, it was a very quiet sort of spring day. I didn't see anybody at all. And basically the walk takes you up, you're heading sort of ever upwards, and eventually you come out onto the chalk downland, and you sort of head up towards a place called Brim's Down. And from Brim's Down, which is it's described on the map as a fur copse, I think it's termed on the OS map. And you basically head out towards the copse. And I always stop there and, you know, for a coffee, because it's just the views are fabulous. And you're still climbing, you're still going up sort of quite gentle climb, but it's just worth sort of pausing there and looking back, particularly to the east, and sort of along the Wylie Valley, really. But from there, you're sort of, again, you're following a bridle way along the ridge top and just heading west at that point. Again, you're sort of, as you climb and as you're just sort of heading along the ridge top, you look away down to the down to your right, which would be to the north, I think. And you know, we have our favourite subject, bottoms. There are bottoms everywhere there. these dry valleys, and I mean, I just love that whole area. It's always really striking and really makes for a great photograph, with you know, black and white or colour.
Yeah,
it's just the way the sun picks out the folds in the land.
Yeah, and those dry valleys, the bottoms, really are a bit of a photographer's dream. I mean, up there, there's plenty of them. There's loads of interesting shapes in the landscape, almost like it's been carved out, and the land, you know, they've been scooped out by a giant or something.
That's a great description. So, I mean, you've got from sort of almost due west of Brim's Down, you're looking down into Woodcombe Bottom, and then sort of the slopes above it to the north are Bidcombe Hill. And then as you're heading along the ridge to the sort of, by this time you're heading southwest, in front of you, you've got Bushcombe Bottom. And there are various sort of rights of way. I mean, you know, please don't go tramping around. It's not open access, so keep to the rights of way. But, you know, you look at the map and there are lots of opportunities to sort of go and explore along there. But heading along that ridge from Brim's Down, and you're heading towards Cold Kitchen Hill. That's your next sort of landmark. I came across, and I know, Glyn, you did this walk as well. You come across that building up at the top, which I described it as a man cave, but it could equally be a woman cave or whatever it is. But it sits at the top of the hill, and I don't know what it, maybe the local shoot uses it, because there's a little kitchen in there, a great big picture window at the back looking across the Deverells, the Wylie Valley to Somerslade Down, and I mean the views up there are just absolutely epic.
I know, it's funny because this building is quite big. I mean, you can see it from a long way away. When I was walking towards it, I thought it must be a big barn or something. But no, it looks like sort of holiday home.
It does, top of the hill.
And the views are fantastic up there.
Yeah.
Of course, it's right next. It's very close to another feature in the landscape as you walk up Cold Kitchen Hill, which is the Long Barrow.
Yeah.
We've talked about Long Barrows at length because actually we're very blessed with having lots of them in Wiltshire. But it's another fine example of a very strategically placed Long Barrow. Because I've seen that, I've spotted that from over in Warminster when I've been walking up Scratchbury, and it must be 5 miles as the crow flies, but very visible.
Yeah, it's. I was looking at the dimensions of that. I mean, it's 70 metres long by 27 metres wide and 4 metres high. So this is a big beast, and it's still sort of really well preserved because it's only been partially excavated. And I think, you know, another friend of the podcast, Sir Richard Colt Hoare, who died about 200 years ago or whatever, but I think he did some partial excavations up there, but it's pretty much intact. And of course, you don't really get that much of a sense of it from ground level. I mean, you're right, you can see it from a long way off as you walk, and it's sort of like, you know, it's a landmark as you continue along the walk that we blogged about. But it's only from the air that you really see the scale of this thing. And we've mentioned it before, this guy who does a lot of drone photography. He's got an Instagram feed called David Abrams, I think, A-B-R-A-M-S.
Yes.
Yeah, and
yes.
He's photographed it from the air, and it's remarkable how sort of perfectly preserved this barrow is.
Yeah, you don't appreciate it from ground level. When you're actually on top of it, it doesn't look too impressive. But that photograph from above, it really stands out. And as I say, when you look at it from a distance, it kind of stands out. But
yeah, but it's a bit like Tin Head. It isn't on the crest of the. It's not on the top of the hill. It's slightly down to one side, so you can see it from certain directions, but not others. You could go not very far away and not be able to see it at all.
Yeah, yeah. It's fascinating to think about how and why they chose these locations, what message they were trying to send to other people who lived in the landscape.
Yeah. But being being a long barrow, it's Neolithic, so makes it 2,500 to 3,500 BC.
Yeah.
So this is. From dates from man's sort of earliest occupation or earliest settlement in this area when sort of farming began.
Yeah, yeah, very, very old. And really just reinforces what we've said about this area. It's been farmed by humans for thousands of years.
Yeah. And just after the Long Barrow and pretty close by, you see the Trig Point, which is the summit of Cold Kitchen Hill, which it's for statistics geeks, it's 257 meters high. It's one of the highest points in Wiltshire. It's something like number five, or a bit lower down in terms of the pecking order of heights, but it feels like it should be almost number one because of the views up there. And again, I think you and I have both taken photographs and posted them on the website. I mean, to the west, you can look across from the Trig Point, and you can see Little Knoll and Long Knoll over towards Stourhead. You can see Alfred's Tower again over by Stourhead, but way, way beyond that. And also to the south, I mean, every direction, the views are just stunning. They really are. Just after Cold Kitchen Hill, and again, it's within just a couple hundred metres, I think, from memory, you've got a Jubilee beacon built for the... there's a whole load of these built across the country for the Queen's, whichever Jubilee it was. So sort of a big wooden post with a sort of fire basket on top. And that actually is something else that really dominates the landscape from you can see that from a very, very long way away for obvious reasons. But again, sort of continuing to head, you're turning west now, having headed sort of southwest to get to Cold Kitchen Hill. You're now heading west and you've got the beacon there. And I think just basically from there, the walk, I ended up back down at Kingston Deverell where I parked the car. But before we sort of descend back down there, and I just have something to say about rights of way. Before descending, it's worthwhile just continuing along the ridgetop. So you're heading around, you sort of turn and then you head sort of northwest. And you're looking down into Bushcombe Bottom that we talked about earlier, and you're heading towards Whitecliff Down, and again you've got Woodcombe Bottom that we talked about earlier, and some beautiful woods there where again the bluebells, we were talking about spring earlier on, the bluebells in those woods are just stunning. And you're heading towards Brims Downhill. But Whitecliff Down is the site of the temple that you mentioned earlier on. So that's a Romano-British temple, and it's quite a size. 50 metres by 50 metres, I read somewhere. So it was a temple, it wasn't a settlement. Obviously a place of worship. But the whole way around there, again, you're looking at the map, you've got earthworks, tumuli, they're marked they're marked everywhere around there. So again, sort of really historic landscape. But heading, basically, you want to get back down to Kingston Deverell, and somebody contacted me, and I think he'd read the walk on the face on the website. That's right. And he asked me how I got down from around the Beacon and Bushcombe Bottom, the head of Bishop, yep, back down to Kingston Deverell. And it opened up a bit of a debate, because when you look at the map, the Bridle Way, which we've been following across the ridge there, the ridge line from Brimsdown, Cold Kitchen, it sort of meets another Bridle Way, which comes up from Kingston Deverell. But they don't actually, certainly looking at the OS map, they don't actually join. So you have to get across from one to the other. Now, when you're up there and you look at the landscape, they're actually right next to each other, but they're divided by a fence. So what I did was to follow the Bridle Way towards sort of Whitecliff Down and that direction. And there's, I can only describe it as it's a jump, which has been built obviously for horses, because I've seen people horse riding up there on several occasions, and I think it's just a jump. So what I did was I stepped across that jump, which took me from one Bridle Way onto the other.
I've done that before. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah.
So you're almost turning back on yourself and coming the direction you've just come, but heading diagonally across the slope back down the hill. And that was the only way that I could see to get across from one Bridle Way to the other. Now, the guy that contacted me, he'd been cycling across the top, which is perfectly, you know, legitimate. It's a Bridle Way, you can cycle on it. And he lifted his bike over that jump, and the farmer happened to be up there, and, you know, basically sort of told him he should stick to the Bridle Way, or stick to the rights of way. So he'd strayed off the rights of way, which, you know, that was sort of intriguing, because you've got this sort of two Bridle Ways running side by side for some distance, you know, sort of heading off to the west. And there seems to be I don't recall a gate in the fence getting you from one to the other. I need to go back and check. So certainly if you're on a bike, there doesn't seem to be any legal way of getting from one to the other.
Yeah, I mean, just looking on the map, you can see the two paths are running parallel.
Yeah.
For quite some way, and you can see there's a fence marked in between them. So.
Yes, that's right.
That's a tricky one.
Yeah. So, you know, if you want to be, which we should stick to rights of way. I'm not going to encourage anybody to stray off rights of way. There are other ways down from Cold Kitchen Hill. That will take you back down to Kingston Deverell. You know, if you wanted to go and have a look at the Beacon, the Jubilee Beacon, you know, you could walk from Cold Kitchen Hill, go down to the Beacon, turn round, and then head back. But you can get onto the Mid Wilts Way, which is marked on the map. So that's one way that heading east again. Towards what's called Crossdyke, which is Crossdyke is a feature in the landscape. It's earthworks which were built. It's thought of built as a sort of land boundaries. So you're heading towards that, and then you've got you meet up with. In fact, Mid Wilts Way then does a sharp right and heads south back directly down to Kingston Deverell. So you know you can get down perfectly legitimately without leaving rights of way. What you can't do is you can't do it on a bike or a horseback, because it's not a Bridle Way. It's a Mid Wilts Way, it's a footpath there. I think, unless somebody can correct us on that, but that's the way it looks. Our chum Steve Dewey did post on the Facebook group when I mentioned this and the difficulties this guy had keeping to rights of way, and he sent me a link to the Wiltshire Definitive Map. which is now online. And definitive maps are, you know, legally that's the go-to point. So any disputes about rights of way and stuff, you have to go back to the definitive map. And so I looked at that, and it's, when you go into the zoom in on your computer screen to the highest magnification, they look to me as though they overlap those two right of ways. So I don't know, does that make it legal to go from one to the other? I suspect the guy that was on his bike, I think probably the farmer mate, his concern might have been damage to that horse jump. You know, I remember I sort of just stepping over it, you know, caused damage in any way, and maybe the farmer would be fine with people stepping over it, but you know, maybe a bike was a bridge too far. But I think you found out that, or maybe somebody suggested that maybe there's been issues of people straying off rights of way up there.
I think it's been a contentious issue throughout lockdown, not just there, but
yeah.
I think the problem is that with people being restricted about what they can do, more people have gone walking in the countryside and aren't as familiar and up to speed with, you know, the rules around rights of way and, you know, and not really understanding things like the countryside code.
Yeah.
So it has caused issues with some paths. And, you know, a classic is in the winter when paths get muddy, people try and avoid the mud. And then you end up straying onto, you know, farmers' fields and things like that, and can get yourself into trouble because obviously farmers are usually quite tolerant of people that are respectful, but you know, if too many people are straying off the path, that's going to cause them an issue.
Yeah, and there is cultivated land up there, and there are several notices about, you know, keeping to the rights of way and privacy, you know, not privacy, but you know, not damaging crops. So you know, you absolutely get where farmers are coming from. They've got a difficult enough job as it is, without having people sort of damaging crops. So but I think, you know, we can but advise people to keep to public rights of way. That's the right thing to do.
Absolutely. It's interesting though, when you were talking about that area at the top, because one place I have not gone and explored, the other side of the hill towards Brimsdown Hill and Bidcombe Wood that way.
Yeah.
And it's just inspired me from talking about this. I'm going to get over there because I want to go in that wood and see the bluebells this year.
I did. I can't remember if I did it as a blog or put some photographs on the. Going back when I first started sort of writing stuff for him in Wiltshire, but I did do a walk over that way with my son a few years ago, and we went down through Bidcombe Wood and sort of walked along. If you look at the map, there's a I think it's a bridleway which skirts the edge of Bidcombe Wood and sort of heads east, and we walked all the way along there, and that was a different walk, and then we sort of eventually came back over Brimsdown again. So we sort of did the walk but heading north instead of south over the, you know, where we were 2 weeks ago. So we headed north, it's quite, the landscape's quite different in nature. It's you don't get the combes and the bottoms that we do to the south of Kingston Deverell, and you know, where we've just been talking about, to the north, the slopes become much more gentle. So you're looking out towards sort of Longleat and that way. Well worth a visit there. I did see a walk. I can't remember. Maybe it's the Ordnance Survey website, something like that. But there's another walk which looks really nice that starts from Longbridge Deverell down near the A350, and that takes you sort of up around the area we've just been talking about. But also, it's quite a big circuit that takes you up to the south of the Wylie as well. That's about 8 or 9 miles from memory, and that looks to be like a nice walk as well.
Yeah, there's no shortage of circular walk potential. Looking at this map, there's so many rights of way and lots of places to explore, and it's well worth it.
Yeah, but again, sort of going back to, you know, the history. I mean, you're looking at all those you know, all around the place up there, you know, the Barrows and the Tumuli, and I mean this whole area, this Neolithic, this Bronze Age, this Iron Age, this Romano-British, this medieval archaeology everywhere up there. It's, you know, it really is a historic landscape.
Okay, so I think we can pretty much wrap up this talk now. And where do you think we'll go next time then?
Well, before we do that, shall we talk about a little surprise for listeners?
Yeah, I think you can put everyone out of their misery. I'm sure they've all been waiting with bated breath to the end of this just to hear this.
Yeah, they will. So come on, we want to hear the offer. With all the walking I do, I do get through walking boots at a rate of knots. And so I was looking for some boots recently, and I actually posted a question on another Facebook group for a photography Facebook group, which I've been listening to been reading for years, and they also, a couple of photographers, have a podcast which is fantastic, and for the photographers amongst you, it's called the Fujicast. And one of the guys who presents this is a guy called Kevin Mullins, who's a terrific, principally he called himself a wedding photographer, but a documentary photographer who lives in Malmesbury, Wiltshire. So he's a local lad. So I put a post on the Fujicast Facebook group saying, anybody got any recommendations for walking boots? Because the other presenter is a guy called Neil James, who lives up near Newbury and does a lot of walking, I know. And he actually does another podcast called The Photography Daily. Podcast. So he does a lot of walking in the sort of the Newbury area, and he was raving about these boots that he bought called Lowa, I think is how you pronounce it, Lowa. So I put a post on the Facebook group saying, you know, do you still like your boots, and you know, what do people think of Lowa? And people piled in saying they're fantastic boots, and there's some other great recommendations as well. So I started looking at Lowa, and I thought, well, yeah, maybe this one, this particular boot. And then this guy pops up and said, I normally keep fairly quiet on social media, he said, but you know, I think he's something like marketing director for Lowa UK. But I think he's one of the guys who runs the UK distributor for Lowa boots. I should have written down the name. I think they're called TKC. And guess what? They're in Steeple Ashton. So they're in Wiltshire.
So they're locals.
They're locals. And Tim Kington, who I've been talking to there, actually had listened to the Bratton Eddington podcast. And he said, I was listening to it, and he said, I can see Bratton from my office window. So there's a sort of local connection there. And anyway, I did end up buying a pair of their boots, and I've got to say the service was just outstanding from them. And sort of in lockdown, you can't go and try boots on or anything. So, you know, he kept sending me pairs of boots to sort of try on at home to get the right size and make sure I was happy with them. And I ended up, you know, buying a pair of their boots, but he was very keen to support us. So he said, look, he said, you know, how about offering a discount to your podcast listeners? So I thought, you know, that'd be great, you know, sort of 5 or 10% discount. And he's given us a 20% discount of Lowa boots.
Wow.
So if you go to Lowa, lowa.co.uk, and you want to buy a pair of their boots, when you sort of do your checkout, you put in a discount code, which is HW, Hidden Wiltshire, HW20, and it will knock 20% off the price. So don't say we never do anything for you.
Well, that's good. Actually, that's it's good as well, because there's a local link there, and we're supporting a local business.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the listeners, the gentleman you spoke to is a listener of our podcast.
He is.
That's fantastic.
So if you listen to this, Tim, thank you very much. Much appreciated. I certainly appreciate it. And we bought a pair of boots for my wife now as well. So.
Oh, there you go. So where are we going next time?
Where are we going next time? I think we're going to go to sort of Castle Combe direction, aren't we?
We are. And actually, let's just qualify that, because this podcast is called Hidden Wiltshire, and Castle Combe isn't very hidden. However, Most people just go to the village. And this podcast, we're not going to do that.
No.
We're going to park there and then not go there.
Yeah, park just outside. So again, it's a walk that I did last year and wrote a blog about it. And we'll tell you more for the next podcast, but I ended up going all over the place and ended up walking about 15 miles, but it doesn't need to be that long. But I was just huge surprise in terms of the countryside around there, which I'd never really, or certainly haven't explored for about 30 years. And, varied. Castle Coombe's been done to death, so I didn't even go into the village. I kept out of it. But there's way more to see down there than just Castle Coombe.
Absolutely, and that's what this is all about. So we'll be back in 2 weeks with Castle Coombe.
And we've got some different music to play you out with today, haven't we? Steve Dixon's been composing again and recording. So the piece we're going to sort of play out with is called Downlands. So this will be the second or second snippet from Downlands, and see if you can identify the bird song or the bird call. In the first bit there was one bird, and now it's a different bird in the outro. So let us know what you think it is.